Thank you for checking out Real Talk Personal Finance. Shit's about to get real. Cashflow King with you today. And in today's episode, I wanted to talk about a recent article that was brought to my attention regarding Social Security solvency options. Coincidentally, I'm going to have this episode come out the same week that the how to obtain and read your Social Security statement comes out for the Get Your Money Right segment. And so this is pretty timely. I wasn't initially planning on doing today's episode, but I came across this a couple weeks before I'm planning on having that Get Your Money Right segment come out for the Social Security statement. So I thought this could be interesting. I do apologize if some of the information seems somewhat repetitive, but that should tell you something because I think I made a few comments in the Get Your Money Right episode about what could possibly be done going forward to help rectify the Social Security situation and potential shortfall for the trust fund. But this article that I'm going to go through, I'm going to read parts of it and I'm going to comment and kind of paraphrase other parts of it. But I thought it was interesting because it comes up with four proposed solutions. So basically, this was an article by Tim Shaw from Checkpoint, which is part of Reuters. And it says the CRS, which is the Congressional Research Service, CRS analyzes effects of Social Security solvency options. They reference the 2023 annual report from the Social Security Board of Trustees, and it's no surprise to anybody, I don't think, that the trust fund is slated to run dry in the not too distant future. So they are looking at basically a 75-year projection period and trying to figure out, like, okay, you know, if we look at that time period and then we also look at a more immediate window, as they term it, between now, say in 2034, which is 10 years from now, what are some potential options and what might that look like and who does that affect, essentially, is what they are discussing in this article. So the board, the Social Security Board of Trustees, provided four different options for addressing this insolvency. And then I'll summarize them and kind of read some excerpts from this and comment on several of them. So the first one is to immediately increase payroll taxes. So that was the first scenario. And I'm going to actually jump down to that and then we'll kind of go back and forth. So under the first scenario, to address the Social Security solvency or insolvency issue, is to immediately increase payroll taxes. And just as a refresher for those that don't know, assuming you go to work for an employer, your portion that you're paying, which is half of it, is 6.2% of your eligible wages up to the taxable wage base that is going towards Social Security, and then your employer is picking up the additional 6.2%. So obviously, if this were to continue, you know, again, the trust fund's going to run dry and there's only going to be enough money available to pay a percentage of benefits going forward. So this first option is to basically increase those payroll taxes that those of us that are working for someone else, and if you're self-employed, you're basically deducting half of it and you're paying the entire thing. What is that? 6.2 times 2 is 12.4. This is one of the potential solutions. The first one talks about a scenario where there's a 3.44% immediate payroll tax increase. And what that would do, according to this article, is ensure that the trust fund would have full benefits so that there would be no benefit reductions throughout this 75-year projection period. So at first glance, this sounds somewhat okay, right? Somewhat appealing. Hey, you know what? It's 3.44%, and you know that's going to be split between employees and employers, right? So it's late when I'm recording this and my brain is fried from today. So if we take the 3.44 divided by 2, we're talking about a 1.72% increase in payroll tax to the individual employee, again, assuming that you work for an organization and they're paying the other half for you. So sounds good at first glance. But a closer look, the article goes on to comment about the fact that in this hypothetical scenario, and they have different age cohorts and different classes of people in terms of, you know, income levels and things like that, but it talks about the 1960 cohort. So these are typically older individuals. We're recording this in the year 2024. So let's say somebody's born in, you know, 1960. That's somebody that's basically 64-ish right now. they're only affected for, you know, a handful of years. The article mentions 4 different years. So even if this increase were to go into effect, they're affected for a very short period of time. Going on to the next cohort, which they term as the 1980 cohort, that these are obviously younger folks, they would pay these higher payroll taxes for about half of their working career, right? And then they have some younger groups in the study or in the article as well, and obviously they would pay this higher rate for essentially all or almost all of their careers. So then it begs the question, is this a fair way to go about it? If you've been paying in at a certain rate over your working career, you're approaching the finish line when it comes to being eligible for Social Security retirement benefits at your full retirement age, does it make sense to do an immediate increase now, have the older people only have to pay that higher amount for a short period of time, and then they keep their full benefits, and then essentially and effectively, those benefits are being subsidized by folks that are younger. Folks that are a little bit younger, okay, maybe they pay the higher amount for half their career. Folks that are just getting started in early career, you know, just beginning their journey, maybe they're paying it for their entire career. So depending on where you as an individual are, both probably from your age, right, might influence your opinion with that, and then just how you feel about the situation in general, is that a quote-unquote fair solution, right? And I'm not here to take sides. I'm just here to comment on this and share some information with you guys, but it's kind of food for thought and something to think about that I thought was interesting in their proposed solution number one, which was an immediate payroll tax increase. And personally, I think that this is possible. I'm not going to comment on whether or not I think it's fair or who it's fair to, but I do think that that is a possibility. The second proposed solution was an immediate benefit reduction. And I think there are a lot of people that would conclude and agree that this is probably not in the cards. This show is not at all political, and we're not here to make it political, but a lot of people would make the comment that it's essentially political suicide for anybody to even mention possibly doing this. But scenario two would be an immediate proposal, just like the first one was immediate, but instead of immediately increasing payroll taxes, this one would immediately reduce monthly benefits to the tune of about 21.3%. So instead of raising the payroll taxes, instead we're just going to go ahead in this scenario and just right away cut benefits. And I don't think that that's going to be welcome news to anybody. However, looking further at the age cohort thing, the article goes on to talk about the fact that, you know, this percentage of benefit reduction would be the same across everybody, regardless of age and their income, their earner status, if you will. And so they seem to suggest that the impact of this particular proposal and this decision would be more equally shared than scenario number one, which is increased payroll taxes and the younger people get fucked, essentially, and the older people are paying a higher payroll tax amount for a shorter period of time. Again, a lot of people don't think that number two is likely. I guess it's a possibility. The third, the next two, are delayed options. The first two were immediate options. One, immediate payroll tax increase. Two, immediate benefit reduction. Now number three is a delayed tax increase. So instead of going back to scenario one where they immediately hike it, instead they delay increases for about 10 years from now, right? And instead of it going up 3.44% split equally between the employee and the employer, instead it will go up to 4.15% and essentially would still be split between the employee and the employer. Now, in this scenario, they go on to talk about the oldest cohort, right? That 1960s cohort. They wouldn't be affected by this hypothetical scenario at all because by the time 10 years from now rolls around, guess what? They're already collecting their Social Security retirement benefits. They don't give a fuck, right? And then it talks about, let's see here, the group, the 1980 cohort group would pay this higher amount just like they would in the first scenario, but they would pay this higher amount for fewer years or a shorter portion of their estimated working career. Right. So if they delayed it, then essentially, you know, they go on to say that this burden would be absorbed by the 1980 and the 2000 birth cohorts under this scenario. So once again, it kind of, I don't want to say stretches it out, but it sort of cuts out the oldest of people that are closest to receiving benefits from having to deal with it. And there's now going to be fewer years for those that are, say, mid-career, for example, that they have to deal with the increased payroll tax. And then once again, the younger folks still seem to get the short end of the stick. But it's very similar in some ways to scenario one, which is a payroll tax increase. However, this scenario number three, it's different because instead of doing it right away, they're suggesting they could delay it for approximately 10 years. So that's potential solution number three. And then finally, potential solution number four, which almost seems to almost happen by default. There's no affirmative election that needs to be made essentially for number four, which is simply a delayed benefit reduction. So roughly 10 years or so from now, you know, that there's going to be essentially a drop off, and they mentioned to the tune of about 25% under this, what they call quote unquote no action scenario. And that would happen over the course of, again, the projection period, this 75-year projection period. And then they make a comment, quote, the percent of benefits that may be supported by ongoing program revenues, payable benefits, may change from year to year. So another way to put that is that they're saying the system could be balanced by raising and lowering the benefit reduction each year, end quote. So there's different ways to approach this. I don't know what the right answer is. I don't think anybody really does. I don't necessarily think that it's an all or nothing decision, or that there's one of these four and these are the only four and that they're mutually exclusive. I think that, as I've said quite some time ago, that it's likely going to be a combination of things. It could be increased payroll taxes, which are suggested here in options one and three. It could potentially be a reduction in benefit amounts, which again are suggested in options two and four. I also think there's some additional things that could happen, like them raising significantly what's called the taxable wage base, which is the portion of your income upon which you're paying these Social Security payroll taxes. I think that could go up significantly. And that opens up a whole separate can of worms with, well, if that happens, then those additional amounts or those additional dollars, does that mean that people's retirement benefits are going to go up proportionately? And, you know, again, that's something that's could be debatable. So there's a lot of moving parts. I thought it was an interesting article. And it, again, I wanted to put this out there, just nice, short and sweet episode for you guys during the same week that we're launching the Get Your Money Right segment for how to obtain and read your Social Security retirement statement. So I think this was, again, something good to take a look at, to get people thinking about things and potentially get people talking about things. And I'm actually curious what you all as the listeners think about these different options. And do you think that there could be potentially other options? Let's keep it non-political. If you send me political stuff, I don't really give a fuck and I'm probably not going to respond to it. But if you have some interesting thoughts one way or the other about potential options for Social Security solvency, I'm all ears. So feel free to email the show, realtalkpersonalfinance@gmail.com. Share your thoughts, share your feedback. And that's all I have for you today. We will see you in the next episode. Check the mic and make sure it sound right, boys.